Do you like what you're hearing right now? Then be sure to check out VOC Nation. Whether it's on VOCNation.com or your favorite podcast provider, VOC Nation offers the greatest in live and on-demand content, great interviews, and incredible insight from those who have lived the business. 7 days a week, VOCNation.com. And don't forget to check us out on Twitter at VOC Nation.
Right now, I'm going to go back to 2012, I think it is, for this classic interview with WWE Hall of Famer, one of my favorite people in wrestling, superstar Billy Graham. Right here, right now at Wrestle Reunion Los Angeles, California, I am with WWE Hall of Famer, the superstar Billy Graham. Superstar Billy Graham, this is the second year in a row we've had you at Wrestle Reunion with Scott Epstein from Publicity Management Services, and it's so good to have you here, a rare appearance by the superstar.
Thank you, my brother. It's good to be here. Good to be here on the radio waves. We on radio, satellite. Where are we on here, brother?
This is WNJC 1360 Philadelphia, and also streaming on the internet at VOCNation.com.
Streaming, brother. Streaming.
Streaming.
Streaming and screaming, brother.
Worldwide.
Worldwide. We're going worldwide.
Worldwide.
Excellent. 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 Thank you, first of all, for inviting me onto the show. I appreciate the invitation. I really do.
Now, great to have you. I said it to you yesterday when we had that little skit with Sassy Stephanie. You're one of the most entertaining personalities ever in professional wrestling. So it's an honor to have you here.
Oh, thank you.
And certainly, now I said WWE Hall of Fame, but there was something that you did a couple years ago. You actually sold your WWE Hall of Fame ring, right?
Yes, yes. Several years ago, as a lot of wrestling fans know, I've had a liver transplant, and I'm on a very extensive medication to prevent my body from rejecting the liver.
Right.
I have a female liver in me, a young girl here in Phoenix, Arizona, and 202 was in a car wreck. She was a donor, and I got her liver, which saved my life. And you have to take anti-rejection medications and a lot of medications in the beginning. And so I actually sold my Hall of Fame induction ring to help pay for these life-saving medications that I'm still taking, and that caused a lot of controversy, and not so much controversy with the fans and those folks, but it caused a lot of animosity with Vince McMahon himself. He didn't quite understand the need for me to sell my Hall of Fame ring, and I didn't want to because I really appreciated being inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame.
Sure.
No question about it. It was a great honor. And I'm still in the Hall of Fame.
Right. Right. Just because you don't have the ring doesn't mean you're not
there. Yeah. They haven't erased my name. So, I did have to sell my WWE Hall of Fame to gain medication for my liver transplant. And so it was a sacrifice. It was a material thing. I regretted doing it, but I had to stay alive.
Right.
You know,
that's
so,
important.
That's important, yeah. I had to stay alive so I could do this interview.
Right.
And, by the way, Philadelphia, I will say that Philadelphia is one of my all-time favorite wrestling cities, of course, going back to wrestling in the Spectrum. And
the old Spectrum. They just knocked that down, Billy.
They leveled it, yeah. They leveled the Spectrum, and I remember especially my cage match in the Spectrum with against Bruno Sammartino, and we had a cage match, and it was on a Friday night, and the following Monday I dropped the Worldwide Wrestling Federation belt to Bob Backlund. But on this night in the Spectrum, it was sold out, and about 5 o'clock, the local news came on and made a local news broadcast to the local community and surrounding suburbs of Philadelphia to the general public to not go to the Spectrum because it was completely sold out, and they had like 5 to 10,000 people trying to get in.
Wow.
To see this cage match between Bruno and I. And so that set the all-time attendance record for the Spectrum, for any event ever held in the Spectrum. And so Philadelphia has always had a special place for me, and the fans were just fantastic. And especially that night against Bruno in a cage with that huge, huge crowd and turning away thousands of people was very, 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 very cool.
Well, and wrestling was such a spectacle back then. I mean, you guys, it wasn't the story, it wasn't the theater that it is today. It was, kayfabe was alive. People really believed what they were seeing, and it was an event. It was an event, you and Bruno, that it was, quite similar to like a boxing match or an MMA match today.
Yes, there's no question about it. Of course, Bruno Sammartino being legitimately the living legend,
yep.
If there was ever a catchphrase to go with your name that fit someone, that fit Bruno. He was literally, and still is, of course, idolized at the time by hundreds of thousands of fans, and rightfully so. And it was a different feel. There was no question about it. There was such intensity, I think would be the word to use in that era,
right?
Compared to the era that we're in now, the era we're in now, it seems to be there's a lot of the wrestling fans and the general public, there seems to be a lot of laughter to it and
showmanship,
and the fans and the general public not taking it as serious as they took a Bruno Sammartino. When Bruno Sammartino came to your city, you set up and took notice.
Yeah,
and so there has been something lost. They've lost the intensity through the years of Vince altering the spectacle of professional wrestling and basically I think kind of degrading the spectacle of professional wrestling and definitely losing the intensity of the matches and the crowd interaction with the wrestlers was something special that's definitely been lost.
Well, Vince doesn't even like to use the term wrestling anymore. He likes sports entertainment. And when you guys were in the ring, you would tell a story, and it was like two guys legitimately didn't like each other and would go into the ring to settle a score. Now that magic is lost. That you don't have that feel. That the two guys legitimately hate each other.
Yes, there's no question about it. The fans paid to see revenge. They paid to see Bruno Sammartino win, and they paid to see his opponent lose, and they believed in it with their heart and soul. I had never seen, even to this day, and including Hulk Hogan, I had never seen wrestling fans so admiring a wrestler as Bruno Sammartino was literally worshipped by his fans. And I've, to this day, including Hulk Hogan at his prime, at his top, I've never seen such a loyalty to a wrestler as there was to Bruno Sammartino.
Now, you mentioned Hulk Hogan. You were an inspiration to a lot of the top performers in the business. Scott Steiner, I saw you take a picture with him. He borrowed your look. Hulk
yes.
Hogan, the same thing with the multicolored beards. Jesse Ventura, Dusty Rhodes, and yourself had a lot of similarities. Those guys all, I can paint a line to those guys in Superstar Billy Graham as far as, you know, being good on the microphone, that look, that style. But who inspired you?
Oh, personally, when I started wrestling, I had always been a fan of Muhammad Ali.
Okay.
And remain a fan. He just celebrated his 70th birthday, as a lot of us know, and is afflicted with Parkinson's disease. But I had been a major fan of Muhammad Ali and followed him very closely. Because I felt that he was the ultimate entertainer,
right?
Of course, a legitimate world champion boxer, but he added such a entertainment ingredient to the spectacle that he just captured your imagination, and I was a huge fan of Ali and used him to inspire me in my wrestling profession, my career. I copied Ali, his rhymes and all of his little poems, and I just altered them to fit wrestling instead of boxing. And so my inspiration was Muhammad Ali.
Now, was all that stuff off the cuff? When you went in there and you said, the man of the hour, the man with the power, too sweet to be sour, did you think about that on the fly, or would you sit there and write that stuff
out? Yeah.
I would
think about it. Ali had cut an old 78. One of those big albums and of rhymes, and I memorized every rhyme he had ever cut, and so I would use these lines and I would alter them to fit pro wrestling, and then I would add to the rhymes and think of what would basically make it a little more, maybe a little more colorful, but definitely to fit the wrestling scene as opposed to the boxing scene. But Ali was my pure and sole only inspiration, and I took all of my stuff from Ali. Of course, you had to have talent to pull off what you took from the man, but he was my my inspiration, and he was, I believe, the ultimate entertainer in professional sports. No question about it.
Now, a lot of your health problems were either directly or indirectly attributed to your involvement in professional wrestling. And in the 1990s, you were very outspoken against Vince McMahon and the WWE for some of the things that happened during the 70s and 80s. Have you patched things up with Vince? Are you guys on good terms today?
No. Well, Vince and I, we really have had a love-hate relationship. For some reason, the final blow, of course, came when I sold my Hall of Fame ring.
Yeah.
He couldn't quite accept my reasoning, which was life and death for medication. I thought that was very easy to understand, my plight to stay alive and needing money for medication. But Vince had a major problem with me selling the Hall of Fame ring, and that kind of finally put the nail in the coffin of our relationship. And like I said, it was a love-hate kind of relationship for years and years prior to that. But that was the final blow, was selling the Hall of Fame ring. And he just couldn't accept that I would do that. And it was absolutely no respect to the ring or the Hall of Fame. It was a matter of survival for medication.
Right, right. No, that's fair enough. Now, you've had so many different kind of iterations of your character over the years. You obviously have a very colorful character in the 70s and the early 80s, and then you went to the NWA and you became a karate fighter for a little while. That had to be a little different.
Yeah, that. And I also took the karate gimmick, that look, into the WWF.
Okay.
For a season, and I did that out of I changed my look from the bleached blonde and the tie dye to the black karate look with a black mustache out of despondency. For being stripped of my title, I felt unjustly. It was kind of a rebellion when Bob Backlund was given the belt from me. That it was so it really affected me. Even though, of course, it's a total work and predetermined, and I knew it was coming. But it was such. To actually see a young man, Bob Backlund, receive such an important belt without having the experience and the charisma to follow Superstar Billy Graham and Bruno Sammartino, and it was an outward appearance of an inward darkness that I felt. I felt a very foreboding attitude when I had to give up the belt to Backlund. Nothing against Backlund personally, it was just his lack of charisma that I felt it was totally unjust to give such an important title to a young man who had absolutely no charisma whatsoever.
When he kept that title for so long and didn't really draw that well, right?
And he kept that title for almost 7 years, six full years, and Vince McMahon Sr.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's, you know.
Try to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Vince McMahon Sr. had to load the cards. I just see two friends from the Netherlands walk by that I email back and forth. Can you imagine that? Two guys came all the way from the Netherlands.
These conventions
to this
out
convention.
It.
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. And I'm sorry, I lost track on some of the friends, but it was the question was
Backlund, 6 years.
6 years, and Vince McMahon Sr. was so stubborn, he knew he had made a mistake by putting the belt on Backlund, and he had to load the cards to draw crowds, and I felt it was very, very unjust, and of having to load these cards up to draw a house because your champion couldn't draw on his own, and Vince McMahon Sr. actually came to Dusty Rhodes and I personally. Dusty and I were on a card supporting Backlund in Madison Square Garden, and Vince McMahon Sr., this is a true story now, folks,
okay,
came to Dusty Rhodes and myself and said, is there any way you two guys can talk to Bob Backlund and help get him some charisma? That is the truth, wrestling fans. That was a direct question from Vince Sr. to Dusty Rhodes and myself, asking if we could help Bob Backlund get charisma. And I said, well, why don't you just get rid of Bob Backlund and put the belt back on me? And you won't have to worry about teaching charisma, which is impossible to do, to Bob Backlund. I told Vince McMahon Sr. that you had made a horrible mistake by choosing Backlund to become your champion when you had people like myself and Dusty Rhodes with so much charisma that we were drawing and turning away people, and then you have a young man come in who was just flat.
Yeah.
Just flat. And, I mean, can you imagine the promoter asking you, is there any way you can help my champion get charisma?
That's it factor. You either have it or you don't.
You either have it or you don't. And we said, no, we cannot help him get charisma because he's beyond the point of no return. And we, of course, I didn't even attempt, and I never had a conversation with Backlund. And Dusty Rhodes said, are you kidding me, Vince? I'm not going to try to tell this guy how to get charisma. It's just like you just said, you either have it or you don't. You can refine your presentation when you're charismatic and sharpen your game, of course. But if you don't have anything to start with, it's a lost cause.
Yeah, you can't build on nothing.
You can't build on nothing.
Yeah. Right, so you went through the black period, then you came back to the tie-dye. You managed Don Morocco. You had that famous incident with Greg the Hammer Valentine. I guess Greg was in the ring with Ricky Itake, and you came in, made the save, and Greg put you out of commission. And you did some announcing work after that, kind of faded away. And that was kind of your exit to the business in the late 80s, right, 1988, 89?
Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. I had already had a hip replacement in 1987, and Vince felt that, and I also felt that actually my physically wrestling ability was gone because of the hip replacement and my lack of mobility, mm-hmm. and my ankles had started crumbling, and my lower back had collapsed from the overuse, prolonged use, and heavy doses of anabolic steroids. That cut off the blood supply to the joints and caused your bones to die. And so I had no business in the ring, but I made an ill-fated comeback and was unable to perform up to standards. And Vince Jr. thought I would be a good manager for Don Morocco because I could still cut a promo and talk.
Sure.
I actually did that for a season, and then it actually became too difficult to literally travel with all the pain that I was in. And so we finally had that match with Greg the Hammer Valentine in Oakland, California, and put his famous figure four toehold on me, and I basically tapped out before tapping out came into existence. and they had to took me out on a stretcher, and it was really, looking back, it was a really sad way to end my career. It's too bad I didn't have the presence of mind to have just stopped and not even come back.
Right.
But I really honestly had to save my money, and I really wanted some more paydays.
Yeah.
And the pay scale had started going up, and I wanted to take advantage of it. But it was very ill-fated and a very unwise decision. And so that's how I made my exit from selling on Madison Square Garden. And a very interesting statistic I'll throw in real quickly about Madison Square Garden and sellouts. I have the record for the highest percentage of sellouts in Madison Square Garden. I don't have the record for as many sellouts because, of course, Bruno Sammartino, being champion for so many years, and, of course, Bob Backlund, have more sellouts than me, but I had 20 out of 21 main event sellouts in Madison Square Garden, which set the all-time highest percentage of sellouts in Madison Square Garden. And oddly, ironically, the only one that did not sell out was against the high chief Peter Maiva. And the main building held about 22,000 people in the main auditorium of the Garden. And we had about 21,000 folks. We were about 1,000 folks short of a sellout. And Vince Sr. told me that he projected it would not sell out because nobody believed that a high chief from Samoa would be the next WWF champion.
Huh.
And that was the reason it would not sell out. But we still came within 1,000 people of selling it out. Even with that mindset that Vince felt, and it was basically true, that I don't believe the fans thought that they were going to see a Samoan chief become the new champion. But yet there was still so much excitement involved and charisma involved. And I had never worked so hard in all my life to put a match over as I did against Peter, who of course, was one of my mentors in San Francisco in 1972 when I was tag team partners and champions with Pat Patterson. The high chief, before he became the high chief, was one of our opponents, and he would always take me aside and walk through the match and show me things that I'd done wrong. And so it was a great honor to wrestle Peter in Madison Square Garden as a main event. And I did everything in my power to guarantee a sellout with him, and we came 1,000 folks short for the very reason that the Vince felt that the people didn't believe they would actually see a Samoan chief become the new champion.
Maybe you shouldn't have booked him in the main event.
Well, he should have booked him in the main event, but we still drew 21,000 people. And there were other main events that had been booked that had drawn only 15,000 people, including Bruce Martino as the champion, so in past years. And so we still drew 21,000 people with them knowing he's not going to win. So that was quite amazing.
Well, Billy, today it is a show. It is a spectacle. It is entertainment. And I guess one of the biggest complaints that I hear when I talk to the older generation of professional wrestlers is a lot of the guys today, they all look the same. They all have that 220-pound chiseled body frame with long hair. Everybody looks the same as opposed to when you were wrestling. Everybody was different shapes, different sizes, different characters. Does that hurt the business today? Is that why professional wrestling is not in, let's say, a golden period right now?
I think something has been lost. Now I just recently I never watch anymore because once you've been champion and you've seen it, once I've seen it all, there's nothing left to see.
Yeah.
And once you've heard it all, there's nothing left to hear. That's basically a Bob Dylan line. I'm a big Bob Dylan fan, and that's a couple lines out of one of his songs. I've seen it all, so there's nothing left to see. And I've heard also there's nothing left to hear. And so basically the fans have seen everything there is to see, and the new generation really, with all of the script writing, with all the writers writing your promos for you, that leaves very, very little chance for the participant to be an original, to have and participate and give an original thought into a promo, because it's already been written out by a team of writers.
Right. Not even necessarily wrestling fans.
Oh,
as writers.
No, of course not. No. Just writers, professional writers.
Right.
And so the product, I did watch it about a month ago in Phoenix. I live in Phoenix, so I was born and raised there. And I did watch a whole segment of Raw one night just to, from start to finish, just to see what the product really looked like. And I just found it so boring and just so scripted. And now the problem is you've lost Shawn Michaels. And, of course, it started with the loss of Eddie Guerrero, dear Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah.
And now Shawn Michaels is retired. Now we're losing the real legends. I guarantee you when the Undertaker defeats Triple H at this coming WrestleMania, that'll be the Undertaker's 20th straight WrestleMania win, I believe.
Yeah.
And that'll be his last match. And the Undertaker will be gone. Shawn Michaels is gone. Triple H is basically not wrestling. And there is no talent. There is no talent equivalent to the talent that was there in years gone by. Real, real, real talent. And the younger generation that is taking over and stepping up, and basically no fault of their own, they just don't have the talent that a Shawn Michaels or an Undertaker, who really is my all-time favorite performer. I was mesmerized by The Undertaker when he first came on the scene. And then, of course, Triple H and folks like that, these guys are gone now.
Yeah.
And you just can't replace these people. And so there's a dilemma. There's a real problem of talent. These younger kids are working as hard as they can. I watch them wrestle, and they're trying the best they can, but there's something missing. There's something missing in the product today that it seems like the real charisma, the charismatic ingredient is missing, and especially with the monologues of the interviews that they're forced to do with the writers and everything. It's really been, I think the glory days are gone forever.
So. Talking to Jimmy Hart, and Jimmy did some work with the WWE back at SummerSlam, and he did a little promo backstage with R-Truth, and he said it was the first time that he'd done some things with the WWE in a long time, and he said it was just so different because Jimmy Hart could take an idea, spit it out on the camera, and really make it make the fans feel it. And this was the first time that he ever had to deal with a writer handing him a script. He had to read it 7 or 8 times and then speak to it on the camera. And it's just so much different. And that's why, in my opinion, and maybe it doesn't even matter what my opinion is because they still make $1 billion a year, but that's why the product is missed. There's just not that special feeling anymore when you go into a WrestleMania.
Yes, there's not that. There's not that. There's not that anticipation of a WrestleMania, and I'll never forget that '84 after I was inducted into '204 after I was inducted to the Hall of Fame, Vince gave me a week run around the territory just to go out and be introduced and to go on the road. In the Northeast, when all the towns were booked around the Northeast that particular week,
yeah.
In the Garden, it was amazing to see the lack of spontaneity and the lack of charisma, and I'll never forget Randy Orton actually came up to me and asked me in one of these towns. Superstar, you've been watching all this. What do I do? Do you have any suggestions for me? Randy Orton. And I said, yeah, you need to be a heel for one thing because you have a natural arrogance about you.
Right.
You know, you're a nice guy, but you have a natural arrogance about you that should be utilized. And it just seems that... it's been lost, the spontaneity and I had to do an interview during that week, and I'll never forget, it was so funny because Stephanie McMahon was still involved at the time, and she came over to the table in the catering room and sat down next to me with the writer's script. And he started laughing, and she's now Superstar. And I really was very fond of Stephanie. We got along great. I was very fond of Stephanie, and she started laughing, and she says, "I know this is very strange for you to be handed a script, but this is what we would really like you to say. This is the." I said, well, that's fine. I said, let me look at this thing. I've never really had a script before, but I'm sure I can adapt to it. Of course, I took it all in a good spirit. I wasn't going to rebel. So I said, this is a pretty good storyline here for this interview. And it was an interview about Randy Orton. And I said, this is a pretty good thoughts here. I said, I can pull this off. I don't think it'll be word for word, but I can get what you want off and pulled off, and I think it's going to work. And so it was the first time I had any girls involved in the interview. It was Candace Michelle had just come on the stage, and Stacey Keibler. And so I was sandwiched in between those two girls. And
Not a bad place to be.
Yes, I lost my train of thought. And I said, well, this isn't a bad idea after all, this script writing stuff. But of course, I'm just watching this young lady walk by. Tammy Stitch distracted me.
the original diva.
Yeah, the original diva. Such a sweet lady. She made me caused me to lose a train of thought because she. Scantily dressed.
I was going to say, must be that shirt.
It's a shirt. It's a shirt that's unbuttoned down to her belly button. And so I got distracted. But nevertheless, I did do the interview and had fun. Had fun doing the interview and adapted, used a little of my own addition to the interview that was written and scripted for me. And so... We pulled it off, and of course, I did not rebel and say I refuse absolutely not to use this scripted interview. I just adapted a little bit, and it worked out fine. But that's a real problem when you have to strangle your talent and don't give them freedom to even think for themselves.
Right.
You know, and have pre-scripts written for them. I think it stifles their natural ability they might have to bring out their own charisma, because you have to study and remember these lines. You have to memorize lines, and it takes it's a bizarre thing, really. And I remember, you remember the guy named Heidenreich?
Heidenreich.
In Phoenix, they had a show in Phoenix, and I went down to see the boys and see the show, and I remember I hadn't been Heidenreich, and he was over in the corner, he was reading his script, and he was trying to study and memorize the script, and he kept looking over at me, and he wanted to meet me, because we had never met before, and he kept looking back down the script, and then looking over at me and looking at the script. And so finally, he threw the script down and got up and came over and said, "I'm next to me," and said, "I got to meet you, superstar. My name is Heidenreich." And I said, "Man, it's great meeting you." He said, "I got to memorize this damn script here, brother." He said, "I got to go back over here in the corner and memorize this thing." I said, "It's better you than me, brother, because I couldn't memorize it." And so that was very bizarre. And he was very frustrated, really, to be honest about it. He was deep in thought and concentration, and it was very bizarre feeling to see a man trying to memorize a script and being frustrated. But he had to, and so he apologized for cutting our quick introduction and visit short. So that kind of sums it up, I guess.
Superstar Billy Graham, the man of the hour, the man with the power, too sweet to be sour. I want to thank you. You know, we've had Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff and Jake Roberts. We've had so many great superstars in professional wrestling on this show. But right here, right now, right here, today, this is kind of my favorite interview of all time. Superstar Billy Graham.
Thank you.
True inspiration to what I do. And
thank you. And by the way, I've heard nothing but tremendous feedback from my agent Scott Epstein and other people about your show, and I'm proud to be on your show, and I appreciate the invitation and of the success of your show, and of all the fans out there, I'd like to say a big hello and keep on enjoying pro wrestling, enjoying this show, and support this show. It's been a pleasure. I appreciate being on and the invitation to be on.
We appreciate it. Billy Graham in the VOC Wrestling Nation worldwide. Joe Stas. What's going on, Joey?
You know, for somebody who makes his living on radio, you have a hard time stringing together words. You all right?
I was trying to make a point. I'm using football as a soliloquy.
You know, you really have a way with words.
That boy didn't even want to call in last week. Here,
and the very first person that was ever in the ring was an amateur, Andy Kaufman.
Andy Kaufman was not an NCAA champion.
Oh, my God.
I am heartbroken. I don't know why you're laughing.
Albert, you're a freeloader.
It is. It's buzzed around the world. Twitter blew up. Facebook blew up.
It's the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. What's going on, Jimmy?
Well, you never know. Telephone, telegraph, and tell the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, we're full of all kind of surprises.
This is the Honky Tonk Man, the greatest intercontinental champion of all time in the WWE, and you're listening to VOC Nation.
You know why you don't want me on your radio show? Because you know the ratings will go through the roof. You'd make a lot of money, and that way you keep me off. That way you will stay always broken.
Hey, this is Total Package, Lex Luger. You're listening to the VOC Nation. Don't miss out. the worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Check out In the Room
every Tuesday night at 9. Listen in.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks, former WCW star Stro Maestro, Kathy Fist, Matt Grimm.
And you and Ray are there too, right, Ray?
We sure are, and we've got great guests like Lex Luger, AJ Styles, Taku, and more. It's a heck of a party. Plus,
I didn't get thrown off buildings.
And there isn't
I didn't get pregnant either.
Sometimes I think it gets so ridiculous.
We were getting into, like, snuff film territory there.
In the Room.
9 p.m. Eastern on VOC Nation.
Yo, this is Jerry Stein of the Nasty Boys. Yeah, Brian Knobs here. You get ready to get nasty? Well, listen to the VOC Nation, baby.
VOC Nation is one of the longest-running wrestling podcast networks. Having started way back in 2010, VOC Nation provides daily streaming shows where fans have the ability to interact with their hosts and guests via phone calls, emails, and Twitter. VOC Nation hosts include former backstage interviewer from both AWA and WWE, Ken Resnick, former WCW performer The Maestro, former Impact performer Wes Crisco, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributor Brady Hicks, and former Philadelphia radio personality Bruce Works. Archive-free content includes past interviews with huge names like Hulk Hogan, Jesse Ventura, Kurt Angle, Jimmy Hart, Ricky Steamboat, Sting, Mick Foley, Joey Styles, Howard Finkel, and so many more. Listen live at VOCNation.com and subscribe to all the podcasts by searching VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app. And be sure to follow these guys on Twitter at VOC Nation.
Phil After has been in the pro wrestling business for over 50 years.
Hey, Tony here with Arn Anderson. Arn, first of all, your height and weight.
6'1", 255.
And now subscribers to VOC Nation Premium get exclusive access to Bill After's archived audio footage.
And where's your hometown?
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay, and give us something about your back. First of all, your relationship to Ole Anderson.
Ole is my...
Subscription to VOC Nation Premium starts at just $3 a month and includes commercial-free audio and video versions of our top podcasts.
Okay, we're speaking here with the manager of the World Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, Tarzan Tyler and Luke Graham, and he's sort of glowing tonight about a new prospect we haven't heard of yet.
And for just $9 a month, After's archives are all yours.
Would you tell us who this new prospect
is?
Well,
I'll tell you, Bill, I've searched the world, and I finally found the true world champion. I finally found...
What's your opinion of Ivan Koloff winning the title from Bruno Sammartino?
Well, I think... I don't know what to say, but I want to say one thing. Bruno was an early champion.
Hear exclusive interviews with the greatest performers of all time.
This is Bill After, and once again, we're speaking here with Bruno Sammartino. Bruno, first of all, how did you and Bruiser lose that title to the Valiants?
Well, actually, it was a very unusual loss, if you want to call it a loss.
Did you have anything to do?
Well, yes, but the whole thing is this, that the rules, as I always understood them, was that the title could only be lost by pin or submission, which is the same rules as my title, the World Wrestling Federation. That night, it was...
To sign up, it's very simple. Head to premium.vocnation.com or go to patreon.com/vocnation. VOC Nation takes you behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history.
Each and every Thursday night, check it out. WCW star Stro Maestro takes you on a journey. It's WCW Retro. Talking old school match of the week, talking dream matches, taking your calls and looking back on an incredible career of acting, entertaining, and wrestling. Check it out, VOCNation.com, WCW Retro. Be sure to call in Thursday nights, 9 Eastern, on the VOC Nation Radio Network.
This is Matt Hardy, and you are listening to the VOC Nation.